Let's say if you're renting a house for $3,000 a month, guess how much you lose a year? $36,000 a year, right? So no matter what you do, if you're renting, you are literally not seeing tax returns. You're not seeing any tax benefits. You're not seeing any. Every year that goes by is just a year later on the 30 years down the road that you're still paying. So that's the hard part for me. Do you go and buy over your means? Absolutely not. Please, if you're qualified for $800,000, start at $650,000 and see what you're comfortable with. Give yourself a little bit of margin in there. You don't need to go liquidate everything you possibly have in this market today. But if you can safely buy, then you are literally not throwing away $36,000 of completely gone money.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green. Please stay tuned to the end of the episode to hear boring yet important disclosures. Thank you.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast, and I'm excited to have Jake Meneth as a guest for the show. He is a real estate investor, real estate agent. He's been playing this game in the industry since 2005, located out of San Diego, California, and has personally sold over 200, probably with your team, over $200 million worth of real estate. That's pretty impressive. Jake, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me, Ken. Yeah, appreciate it. It's been a long process and a lot of information and a lot of knowledge learned. Trial and error.
And as listeners of the show are aware, one of my favorite investments, I love real estate. I've always been fascinated by it and have been pretty happy. We've had a few people in the real estate game come on this year and would love to talk about which you have a lot of experience. And by the way, 05, you've experienced what it's like when it goes from silly town and people are buying a house and flipping it, selling it the next day, literally the next day. So you've experienced all these ups and downs. And we've been talking to some other real estate agents recently this year. I was talking to a friend and client a couple of weeks ago in real estate. And I said, hey, what's next year look like? And he just started laughing. So he's not predicting he's going to make nothing. However, he's prepared for it. Now, that's an extreme opinion, but I do respect it. And I was just curious what, since being in the industry since 05, what you're experiencing in the San Diego area and what you've experienced over the last several years. Has been a phenomenal seller's market up here in the Reno Tahoe area. It's been insane, but also in the last 4 months, it's almost like everything had, not everything, but pretty close to everything in Nevada has come to a screeching halt when it comes to sales. And I was just wondering if you can speak to your experience. I don't think you're just tied to San Diego. I think you got your fingers in real estate across the country. But can you talk about all those pieces? And by the way, the $200 million, was that just literally through you?
Yeah, that's pretty much like 20 deals a year for 20 years.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
Congratulations.
Yeah, this time frame right now that we're in is pretty interesting. Like I said, I got involved in 2005. Actually, I was part of that kind of mess of loans that they were giving people. I graduated college, had literally no job, no money. And they're like, hey, here's $500,000. Go buy a house. And I was like, what is this? It's called a no docs loan or whatever it was.
And you don't have to prove anything. Like you just state what your income is.
I went on my dad's like car payment when I was 18. So my credit was like 800 and they're like, oh, great credit. Yeah, you're good to go. And ended up being great for me because I was a smart investor and made money and held on to it and sold it a lot later for a lot more than I paid for it. But yeah, it was a mess. Getting involved was awesome for me though, because as it crashed, I had no difference. I didn't know. So I was hitting the streets, hustling as much as possible. So it's a nice thing to start in a down market. But yes, I saw a lot of agents that I had just met and known and respected that went away real quick and found different jobs or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that's very nice timing for you, right? To your point, and I'm sure this will resonate. You make money in real estate on what you buy, not on what you sell. So here you're coming into a market where it's just going down and going down. Mm-hmm. And so you're having the ability to go acquire some pretty phenomenal properties, heavily discounted price.
Definitely. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing is, you know, real estate's such a, I'm sure your other guests have hammered this point too, but real estate, really in the history of beginning to end, it's gone its ups and downs, but it's always gone up. And I think that's just comes to straight up our population's exploded. Like what, within the last 50 years, we're up to about 8 billion people or something. And I don't really see that changing a whole lot. So yeah, land investments. My grandpa actually, and this is kind of interesting. My grandpa told me when I was 10, he said, find a city you like and buy in all four quadrants of the city, buy raw land on the outskirts. And he's like, at some point you're going to hit because the city's got to grow. And that was so funny. He told me to do that in Vegas in 1985. That would have worked out well.
Yeah, it would have. And that's pretty interesting. That's a great point. Just in all the corners.
Yeah. So you find a good city. But that's really, you're talking about where I'm at, San Diego, and different investment opportunities that I see. And one thing I wanted to talk to you about on the show was I like finding cities that I call like the island theory, right? Like San Diego, I'll give as an example. San Diego is pushed up against four geographic can't build type of zones, like San Francisco. So you go south, you got Mexico. You go west, you got the Pacific Ocean. If you go north, there's a huge military base called Pendleton. And then east is all national forest. So when you find little cities or big cities, whatever, that are completely gridlocked, that is where I like to do a lot of my investments. Because as time goes by, it just basically builds inward. Property prices and everything else go up. Rental goes up. So it's, yeah, there's quite a few places like that. But I like Colorado Springs right now is a great spot where there's huge mountains and some military bases around. So yeah, different. Finding the city, I think, is just as important as finding the property. Making sure that you have the right value in what you buy, obviously.
Yeah. How does that look? It's interesting. I had a real estate investor on, I don't know, a month or so ago. Time has folded as always this year. And it was interesting. And I always like the different perspectives. His deal was flipping rural land in across the nation. That was like a very fascinating business model because at first glance, it's like, hey, banks don't like undeveloped property. It's got to be an interesting niche, but he's got a very effective system on it. And now on the other spectrum, you really like going into, to your point, unrelocked and looking for a good city that is Knock Mill Grow. And so what does that look like? My home's like in Midtown Reno and there really isn't anything around us. And so what are you looking for like in Colorado Springs or different cities on something that does have that kind of boundary condition where you just can't go out? What are you looking for? I would almost think the better, like, man, that doesn't sound too attractive because everything's going to be expensive. But obviously you've got a niche. What are you looking for to take advantage of how that's going to appreciate?
Zoning is so missed on so many different avenues. Like you'll see a single family house. It's a bummer because it is destroying certain neighborhoods with some of the cute old school neighborhoods. But some of the zonings on those, if people think that they're just like a duplex can go on there, but a lot of them are zoned to where they're multifamily. And a lot of the zoning stuff, especially in San Diego right now, is drastically changing because we have so many people in the small, like I said, boundary city, basically, they're starting to loosen guidelines. So if you do one unit of low income housing, you can get permit for an eightplex on some of these different spots. And so I think if you can just basically buy these and hold on to them, they don't have to be eightplexes right now. Who's buying the eightplexes down the road or the big developers and stuff like that. So if you can bankroll that, fantastic. You're ahead of the game. But really it's, that ADUs also, they're ADUs, additional dwelling unit. So it'd be like a grandma unit or granny unit on the back of your property. Those things are in crazy demand right now.
No, that's a great point. I'm going to pat myself on the back too, because when we bought in Midtown, really didn't want to live there 7 or 8 years ago, but my wife liked it. And when we went to go see the property, I saw that it was zoned multifamily. I used to do a lot of land development when I was hiring full time. I saw a zone multifamily. There's only one structure on it. And all I saw was exit strategy. It's like, hey, this is going to provide a shelter. It improves our cash flow. Hey, and 2/3 of our payment, I know it's going to interest, but at least 1/3 is going to a principal. You get to build up equity in. And it's been interesting. Now, yeah, I guess you could say in some neighborhood it's destroying. I would say our neighborhood, we've really been improving it. So, I mean, there's less gunfire now. I used to joke, I was like, what the hell is that? So I think that was a gun. But yeah, no, that's a very interesting approach. And to your point on the ADUs, and you see it getting a lot of popularity here in Reno, and I'm sure in Vegas and some of the other cities, where there's only so much you can do. There's only so much sprawl. And if we're not landlocked, there's only so much sprawl that can occur. That seems like a great approach. Now, You really like doing the real estate investment, mostly, I assume, for your portfolio. Do you are out there representing and helping buyers, sellers? How do you, now you did over $200 million in real estate sales. I would assume you still have your fingers in that as well.
Yeah, truthfully, that's my bread and butter right now. It's helping, specifically being a real estate agent. But I work a lot with investors, people, especially in this last year, people cash out, refi, reinvesting at a low interest rate, which, hey, I think you and I had talked in the past that I think you might help advise people too to refi at 3%, stuff like that, because at that point it was free money. So we're taking their cash out refi and reinvesting them into different rentals. And even if they break even over 30 years of the loan, some of the people of my age around 40, they'll have a free and clear house at 70, multiple free and clear places at 70 at a 3% interest rate, which is insane.
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you remind me of that. I know it was like a few years ago, probably an introduction from your brother. You just gave me a buzz real quick when we're talking about the refi situation and just my thoughts on it. And we're in alignment. Mm-hmm. I helped out a lot of people. I'm a huge fan of good debt. You can go, these mortgage companies, I mean, you can go, I'm not typically a fan of a 15-year mortgage. I understand the emotion behind it. And there's definitely value if you can come in and buy a property for cash, because boy, that's usually going to be heavily discounted. That's why you would do it.
Absolutely. But I understand that's the only reason you do it.
Yeah, but understanding the time value of money. I've been talking to a lot of clients over this year, and we're doing happy dances and high fives that families ranging from as low as 2.25, 30-year fixed mortgages to 3.5%. And we're doing a happy dance. And not that I'm happy seeing inflation just so damn high. I was upset when it was 4 last year. And we're seeing 8 continuously. But look at that. Watch all these great financial gurus that are going to come out next year, which were funded by the mortgage companies in some way, talking about how important, how smart it would be to go get a 15-year mortgage. Now, why the hell would they do that? Because they want to get out of this 30-year notes they're stuck with, making only 3%, 2.5%, 3%, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting to see the ads, because it's, hey, get rid of your 3% loan for an 8%.
Yeah, they'll come up with something. I wouldn't be surprised to see a 50-year, 100-year mortgage come out soon. Just something that they can get out of these things in a way.
Yeah.
But that's really great input on the city piece. And that's interesting. I wrote in my notes, and it's going to go in my mind dump to call one of my friends, very good planner here, very good engineering firm, and say, hey, let's go revisit what I want to do a few years ago on the property. Maybe I got even more capacity. At one point in time, it was just one other unit because of all the growth. And boy, did COVID just light it up for the Truckee, Lake Tahoe, Reno area, and actually probably all of Nevada and Texas and Idaho. Really, your governor, and I don't know, I'm sure he's a nice guy in person, but he really did get realtor of the year for a lot of states over the last couple of years. And it's interesting, I don't know what you've experienced, but I'm not saying like in San Diego, but as a state, I think last year was the first year in a long time, if ever, in California that actually experienced a population decline. That's how many people left California. And I'm sure most listeners of the show have been to California. California is a beautiful state in most areas. And San Diego is freaking gorgeous. Although, I don't know who your mayor is in the Gaslamp District. I was down there for one of my brother's bachelor parties earlier this year. And I'm like, what the hell happened there? I have never seen a homeless. I didn't think it was possible in San Diego.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Man, I have no idea, but it is as bad as I've ever seen it.
I couldn't believe it. But then again, it just shows for the need for more structures and more real estate to house people. There's obviously something going on in LA too, coming back from Disneyland last year. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just insane. San Francisco, insane. And I just went a little bit on a tangent, but more on the fun stuff. So now, are you just in the California? I know you mentioned Colorado Springs, but as helping real estate investors, what states do you have your fingers in across all the states, or where's more so your focus for the clients you represent?
Yeah, I'm all over, to be honest with you. Yeah, we have vacation rental in Florida. I have a returning 33 unit apartment complex in Syracuse that we're turning into an outpatient center through the hospital, which is super cool.
That's clever.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff. There's a bunch in Kansas City in Missouri, mostly because it's super tenant friendly. And at one point, California, I sold mostly California stuff because I was super frustrated with not being able to get a tenant out if I needed to and things like that. So that was a I was tough here for the last 2 years.
It isn't even getting tougher in California. I have a good friend who's just been for the last couple of years, like out of California, moving as much property as possible because it's just become way too difficult to be a landlord. It's too hard. And all of a sudden, what seems like a very safe, for the most part, investment strategy, actually, you're not allowed to say safer. Safer investment strategy, not feeling so safe anymore, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's that moratorium that we passed through COVID just kept going. And I know a ton of people that lost 2 years of full-on rent. And when you're talking like California prices, you buy a house at $800,000 by the median house at the time. That's a $4,000 to $5,000 mortgage at least a month. And that's 2 years of that. So that's like 100K.
Good intentions with unintended consequences. I am sure what the government did do, though, is like, hey, there's a moratorium. Tenants don't have to pay. So what we're going to do is we're not going to charge you for any of the utilities, landlord. We're not going to charge you any real estate property tax. You're just not going to have to pay anything as well. Was it addressed both ways? Or
nothing I saw.
No.
Maybe if you're the right person to represent you, maybe you can get up the ladder enough to where they make you go away. But I didn't see that.
Kind of was interesting is like the ski resort formerly known as Squaw Valley. I always forget the new name, Palisades of Tahoe or Tahoe Palisades. I remember when everything got shut down, there's this beautiful restaurant in Squaw called Plum Jack. It was still open somehow. But that was interesting. If you want to have fun, go research on who owns that. So moving, spreading out, how do you do that? Now, one thing that's great about you live in a beautiful city, San Diego's gorgeous. The value of being a landlord, what's in your backyard? You have a lot of control. You have a lot of oversight. No, lack of control because of rules and regs. However, you really, it's right there. You can measure what's going on. It's easier to manage. And it's your territory. You know the rules and what's going on. How do you handle a 32-unit complex in Florida? How do you handle all these properties in Kansas City? What does that look like? Do you have property managers? Are you doing this all remotely? How do you play that game effectively?
That's a great question. So yeah, I do a little bit of both. I have a property manager in Kansas City, some of the Syracuse and stuff. We're dealing with different contractors. I have one business partner on both the Miami and the Syracuse, the big ones. Yeah, that's a great question. I think it just depends on who you know and how you know them. Because I have the contractors and stuff that we have set up. They're getting tenants in place and turning that one unit into the 33 unit into the outpatient pavilion, basically. That foreman, we basically hired a foreman. He's just, everybody's on it. And so I think that's the key. If I was going to invest just by myself sporadically across the United States, one here, one there, I would probably do it myself if it is one unit. When you start getting multiple units, that's when it really becomes a little bit more taxing.
There's a lot of complexity to that. And I'm not sure if you're familiar, John, but best-selling book, Building Wealth, One House at a Time. He's been on my show a couple times. I'd like to have him come on again because I love these different approaches. And he very charismatic, very fun. Homes in Florida for him. And he's built and helped a lot of people build a lot of wealth just buying one house at a time. And also based upon his experience, he didn't like having an apartment because his experience back then is like you try to collect rent from the one tenant, if I remember the story correctly, and then the other tenants hear that you're collecting rent and they all disappear. But it didn't work out too well for him. It's just a fun story. But I've also seen on the flip side, I have seen just insane income streams and insane portfolios. There's probably more risk in that game with these apartment complexes and these bigger units. Boy, that's a bright and shiny object. I love the simplicity of a single family residence, especially when it's in your neighborhood. But what attracted you? You're a little bit more of a danger seeker when you start getting into these apartment 32 unit. That's, in my eyes, that's pretty big.
Absolutely. I think for that one specifically, it was just this really cool idea that we had, and we were able to pretty much get the right permits and stuff on it. It was converting what was not necessarily a rundown, this big 33-unit apartment complex that was right next to this hospital. And so my business partner up there, he's the one that really had more of the connections with the hospital and stuff. And so being able to turn it into an outpatient place, it's been huge. And so the returns on it are just, it's not something that I would probably typically get into. It just happened to be the right person at the right time with the right deal. So.
Yeah, so there's luck involved, but also I have found that the harder you work, the luckier you get. These relationships take time.
Yes.
To build. And maybe if I can go a little bit down this path, for me personally, and I always make fun of myself, I finally became a landlord this year. I cheated Jake, and I'm going to have the SBA people come on. One of my companies is the tenant of becoming a landlord. So it's a safe way to get my dip my toes in, right?
Yeah.
It's like I'm pretty confident my advisory firm is going to pay the landlord, right? If not, that's a problem. But I know I'm going to take really good care of the building.
Right.
So it's my way to, and I was kind of forced to, I couldn't renew my 3-year lease, which just killed me. It's great. Now I got to go buy a damn building. I don't want to do this. But how I've always loved the idea. I really enjoy real estate because you're getting multiple benefits with the use of $1. There's some really good tax advantages. It can create really good equity over time as it appreciates. And you don't have to wait like your typical IRA. And I'm not anti-IRA. The last place I usually like to look, you get to enjoy that cash flow throughout your life.
Absolutely.
Right? If done right. And wow, what a powerful way when you go into retirement to have all these properties where you're providing value for others, you're providing shelter, you're creating value for them. And then it's creating this nice passive income stream all throughout your life that you get to enjoy and use today. And then when you go into retirement, not a bad retirement strategy, is it?
No, absolutely. Yeah. And that's so funny that you bring that up, because that's literally my entire first conversation with every new buyer I have is I try to compare it basically to 401k or something like that. Look, even if you're negative, let's say you buy a rental, right? Kansas City, let's use that example. $150,000 is like an easy going rate in Kansas City. So you put 40K down because that's roughly 25.
By the way, I have to interrupt for a second. 150, yeah. What does that buy? Like
it buys like a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house, 3-bedroom.
In Kansas City? And you compare that to San Diego. What is that? A garage maybe? A dog house?
Maybe a mobile home that has fees that are like $1,500 more.
Yeah. So I could see the attraction. And I'm sorry I cut you off. Say $40,000 down. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's where I'm trying to some of the deals that I've been working in is just you really get paid half of them. Honestly, the truth is I just have been helping people because I see, you put 40K down on 150, right? And it rents for $1,500 a month. So
That's insane.
It's like a straight wash almost, and to the point where you'll probably be profitable, but let's just say you're not. Let's just say you're negative $300 a month. And this is where people, they freak out. And like you said, we can't use the word safe, but like a safer is they start freaking out when they think of losing $300 a month. What if it goes vacant for 2 months? Well, if you calculate out $300 a month times 3 years, you're still way up. You're going to walk away with like a $300,000 house by day. And yeah, so I always say, are you contributing to your current 401k? They're like, oh yeah. Oh, how much is that? They're like $300 a month. I'm like, that's what I'm saying. It's an additional 401k that your tenant is paying for.
Yeah. What's interesting, and I think we come out of the womb being taught to go get loans, right? Go invest in 401ks. When you look, you turn on the TV, it's just consistent. I don't want to say brainwashing. It's probably a little extreme. Consistent, nonstop communication via commercials and financial gurus. Like you're watching Fox Business or CNBC, and literally people obviously enjoy watching that stuff, but at the same time, and it's just literally a nonstop show about how you should have all your money in the stock market. And the stock market is a bright and shiny object. For me, I do enjoy it, but I also think you should definitely, if you want true diversification, that's not handling a bond portfolio with your equities. It's having a portion in the stock market to enjoy that bucket, and then having a portion in a savings account. And I don't think you're familiar with my terminology for bank of source, but having a bucket in dividend paying whole life insurance, essentially, and then having money under a mattress and having money in real estate and having money investing in different businesses. That is a balanced portfolio where you can hit in all sides. And I would argue if you look at all these different areas to invest, I would argue the majority in the room, if they had to choose just one and you look at all the benefits they create, I would say probably most human beings are going to approve. If they had to choose one, So if I buy real estate, I get to enjoy all that cash flow and all these pieces. And oh yeah, and it's also really good retirement. Or invest in a 401k or some other qualified plan like an IRA. And from 25 to 60, you get to look at some piece of paper, but you don't get to touch it. You can't use it. We're going to penalize the hell out of you try to get it, right? If it's the stock market's great when it cooperates, not so great when it doesn't. So on the down years, you better not pull out any money. Where when you look at real estate, it's like, wait a minute, I can own this real estate. I can enjoy the use of that money today once it starts cash flowing. It's going to create more net worth over time. Oh, and have a nice, and I get to use it for retirement too. But how many people are saying, oh, I can't wait to go buy investment property? There's a real hesitation to it. And by the way, I'm making fun of myself because I haven't done it forever. And that goes to the weak link. And I'm very interested in this. You're telling me 40 grand down on a property, like, okay, sign me up. But then the other me who sits on these ideas for 48 hours, I start poking holes in it. Who the hell manages that? Yeah. How do you know? How do you get a team that trusts? What do you do for your real estate investors? Dude, that sounds really cool. I'd like to have $1,500 in rent coming in, but I've also seen through my childhood what tenants can do to properties.
Absolutely. Yep. And then there's your risk. Absolutely.
So how do you mitigate that? How do you get someone like me who has no tolerance for losing money to play that game? How do you help real estate investors invest in something that's pretty far away? So how do you help them find that team? And how do you find a good property manager?
Yeah, that's a great question. One is your inspection. When you're buying the house, when you're going through this, that has been the number one thing is you really, as an but far away investment, you need to make sure that house is A, either bulletproof, or B, you're going to be able to put money in to make it bulletproof. Because that's a huge part is a lot of people don't realize. I'm in San Diego, so a lot of my clients are warm weather folk in the sense where, hey, guess what? Pipes freeze over there. Like there's some stuff that can happen over there. So anyways, yeah, to answer your question, finding a top notch for somebody that really is more on the tries to be as safe as possible. That's where I would definitely budget in 10%, I think is a going rate for a property manager. So on $1,500, whatever, $150 a month.
They're getting that 10% on gross.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So is it really just 10% when you factor everything in? I've seen what property managers can do, right?
Oh yeah. No, it's usually, and then it's 10%, and then it's, oh, hey, there's a move out inspection. Oh, we got to do all this work. By the way, we have a handyman that we subcontract. So it's like nickel dime. But when all said and done, I try to keep by that kind of 10% or 1% model, however you want to look at it.
What's 1% mean? What do you mean by 1%?
So 150,000, you need to rent it for 1500.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Where did that come from? That's a nice rule of thumb.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's in my head knowledge from years back. I picked it up somewhere along the street corner. Somewhere.
What a lot of first-time home buyers forget is it's not just the principal and interest, and it's not just your utilities, and it's not just the property taxes. You also, and this is what's missed by a lot of homeowners, you also have to have a maintenance piece. When you said 1%, I have, unfortunately, on my house, a 2% on what that house is worth budget for maintenance. Look at that number, it's like, damn it. It's because things break, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you'll be rolling in it for a good year and a half, and all of a sudden there's, hey, guess what? Your roof's leaking, and you're like,
because you brought up the 1% piece, what are you looking at what do you recommend for real estate investors on like a reserve fund? $1,500 gross is pouring in, but now your property manager just took $150. So now you only have $1,350 left. And then how much would you recommend of that money coming in, going into a reserve / contingency fund for maintenance, repair, upkeep?
I like to do 10% a month instead of a separate repair account. So all of a sudden now from $1,500 a month in my scenario, you take $150 out for the property manager, $150 out for a rainy day over time. So you're already down to 12, but
yeah. And then you got I don't want to see what mortgage rates are right now.
Actually, it's surprisingly, it's down 1% from a month ago.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So was that, what's that put it at now? 8?
6.3 something was the primary tune.
And is that 6.3, but that's for
30 years.
I thought we get frowned upon if we're trying to buy a second, third property, don't they add 100?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's probably 7.25 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause why not? Right. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Actually, with just a quick side note on that, right now it's amazing to buy where the homeowner will buy down your points. So you can actually still get in a 6% loan because the sellers, instead of getting a lower sale price, so let's say something sitting on the market for 2 months, because obviously nobody's so super hot for buyers right now, you can go in and negotiate, hey, I want $35,000 in closing costs for my loan. And they will, you can buy down your loan from, let's say, 7.25 to 5.5.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So they're still making their cash in a sense because you're buying it at a higher purchase price, but you're just leveraging that $35,000 towards buying your loan down.
No, I know anytime there's challenges, that's what I love about free enterprise and just all the entrepreneurs out there, is all these optimists out there always find a way to play the game and modify the rules and come up with really creative strategies.
Yeah. The house is going to appraise for a lot more than what you buy it for. So use that appraisal to your benefit and buy down your loan.
Yeah, no, it's really clever. And I was explaining this to my wife or a friend this week. It's just really not to discount it, because I understand how serious people can be about money. And I get it, right? It's concerning. We need it. It's energy. It's how we live. But to me, it really is like, it's all a game. It's like, and some games are really not fun and boring, and other games are really exciting. It's just, how do you want to play it? And it's pretty neat. And so real estate, which is always been very fascinating to me, it's also a game that really scares the crap out of me, because I don't want to lose it. I don't want to lose that game. But it sounds like, obviously, from your experience, what you shared, very fun for you. Done really well since 2005. Being involved in sales over 200 million real estate, that's quite the accomplishment. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you're still playing the game and having fun.
That's right. Yeah. And that's who sold out. He said there's good debt and bad debt. I try to focus on the good.
Yeah. If I can think, if it's got tongue tied, because I forgot to turn off my phone that caught my attention on the other screen. I think that's it, Jake. I'm done. I could go on for a long time. Yeah, there's a lot of things I want to go, but I know I've already held you captive for quite some time. I would just say, hey, best way, and my brain's spinning because I know I'll probably be reaching out to you real soon talking about, I just never thought I'd go to Kansas City, but I have some really good friends that are nuts that actually I always get screwed up too. I'm not a huge football guy. I always love it when it's on TV, but I don't really follow it. Yeah. I just learned, I think recently, that I guess the Chiefs aren't in Kansas. They're not in Kansas City, apparently.
They're not in Kansas. They're in Missouri or in the outskirts.
Yeah, it shows what a moron I am, how ignorant it is. I'm outside my area. But I was like, oh, that's great. I got property and I can finally see Kansas City, but it's not there. I keep confusing it and see the Chiefs. Hey, Jake, thanks so much for coming on the show. For everyone listening to this podcast, what is the best way for people to reach out to? I mean, are you okay with them giving you a call to ask you questions about real estate?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, call or email. My email is my full name, which is jacobmenethrealtor@gmail.com. That's my one's email.
He's a wheeze. That's a mouthful. jacobmenethrealtor. And so best way to reach out to you is email. And what's the best number to give you?
Yeah, it'd be my cell phone, which is 619-208-3562. Yeah.
But, and we're going to have everything in the show notes, everyone listening. So we'll have the best way to reach out to you, if it's a website, telephone number, email address. Everyone listening, we'll have that in the show notes, because good luck. That's a mouthful for jacobmenethrealtor@gmail.com. But we'll have everything in the show notes. And yeah, outside me getting distracted for a moment, really fun episode, very fun podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else you wanted to add before you get to enjoy your weekend?
I don't think so, man. Yeah, it's just having fun.
I do have one last question. I didn't mean to do this to everyone, but we don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
And everything's been just so optimist on this. I didn't hear one piece of doom and gloom on this discussion. Now, a lot of people, realtors, are really freaked out because they're not going to see income. And others that are seasoned, it's just no big deal. It's just part of the game going into 2023. But what are you seeing as a potential dangers for people going into 2023 and just leap? And what do you see as great, exciting opportunities for people outside what you already shared, right? There are some really great opportunities, even with this high interest rate environment, investing, for example, in Kansas City. But how about people are not looking at the investment piece? And I know this is going outside the investment area, but how about people are just trying to buy their first home? And this is a big deal for some younger clients. It's like, when do they buy? It's still a little painful relative to what interest rates were. And this is probably an unfair question, but would you say, well, maybe wait it out, build up some more liquidity? We might see some really good discounts. What are you thinking? And I know Reno's not your neck of the woods, but no. I think you know this area pretty well.
Absolutely.
Reno, Tahoe area and other cities. What are you thinking? What if someone's a first-time home buyer, they're not even ready for the investment world in real estate yet. What are your thoughts on that? Would it be advantageous to just keep building up some cash and waiting maybe for some more discounting? My gut is telling me we're not going to experience. The developers learned in 06. They built so much inventory in our area that Reno and 7 hours down south in Vegas and Arizona, Utah area, it became a ghost town. Reno was a ghost town. They learned from it. They've been very slow at building. And so I don't think we're going to see this huge cliff like we experienced back in 06. But I'm curious what your thoughts are. At the same time, I lean towards the pause button and seeing what happens with downward pressures in real estate, building up cash. But I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that, because you're by far more of an expert in real estate than me.
Absolutely. One, I do agree with you. I don't think that the market, it's funny to hear my friends and different people that give you their own prediction outside of an expert world. And they, it's going to take like you've never seen it before and all this stuff. I completely disagree. I think that I think 2019 prices are probably about where we're at, where we're going to go, which is right before the 2020 COVID explosion. That's personally where I think we're be right at that. I do think that the 6% is going to be the new standard. I think that 6 is pretty much the new 3.
That's the new 3.
Yeah. In the sense of where we're going. And then two, for first-time home buyers, here's my personal thought. And let's say if you're renting a house for $3,000 a month, guess how much you lose a year? $36,000 a year, right? So no matter what you do, if you're renting, you are literally not seeing tax returns. You're not seeing any tax benefits. You're not seeing any. Every year that goes by is just a year later on the 30 years down the road that you're still paying. So that's the hard part for me. Do you go and buy over your means? Absolutely not. Please, if you're qualified for $800,000, start at $650,000 and see what you're comfortable with. Give yourself a little bit of margin in there. You don't need to go liquidate everything you possibly have in this market today. But if you can safely buy, then you are literally not throwing away $36,000 of completely gone money.
Gosh, man, I'm so glad I held you just a little bit longer, because that is a great answer and just pulling things in perspective. And I'm probably have talked about this in the past. I remember my conversation with my wife. I've owned a home. I rented. I was like, hey, renting's kind of nice because I don't have to fix any of these damn problems. When the time was right to go buy, my wife really wanted to get something. And for me, my perspective was from a cash flow and exit strategy play. And to your point, all that money was just going to rent. It was building no equity. And so when we found our place, I was like, hey, it creates more cash flow for us. We get the tax advantages. We're building equity. And I see a lot of exit strategy because of the zoning. And so it made pure sense. But I also, which I'll be in trouble if my wife hears this episode, but we'll find out how long it is till she hears it. I also point out we're not putting a damn penny into this house. She forgot that part of the agreement because the kitchen discussion keeps coming up, the backyard, the front yard, the fence. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Remember what I said? I'm not putting a penny in this. It's all about cash flow. It's just shelter for us. But she's right. We should turn it from a freaking house into a home. Hey, Jake, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for staying a little bit longer. I know I pulled you back in, but that was a great perspective for all the first time home buyers out there that, hey, 6, you go back in time, 6 is pretty, it's just fine. It really is the new 3. And if you look at it from a cash flow perspective and you look at the long game, and also even if you go buy a house and it wins in the cash flow strategy and maybe it goes down a little bit in a year, over the long term, you still won.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
you still win.
Yeah,
Jake, thanks so much for coming on. We'll have everything in the show notes for everyone listening. And if you got any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to Jake.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks, everyone.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. The content is intended for United States audiences only. Opinions expressed are as of the date of this publication, and such opinions are subject to change. Green Financial and Insurance Services Limited, Green, is not responsible for any trading decisions, damages, or other claimed losses resulting from or related to the content presented. Green makes no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information presented. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Forecasts are not a reliable indicator of future results. Investors should be aware of the risks associated with investing. All investments are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of capital. Investors should seriously consider if an investment is suitable for them by referencing their own financial position, investment objectives, and risk profile. Consult with a qualified financial advisor as necessary before making any investment decisions. Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.